It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. And now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you, this is Caffeinated Comics. I'm your host, John Clark. I'm a little raspy and I'm a little tired. It's been a big couple of weeks. We've had some really cool stuff happen. Let's get that out of the way before we talk to one of the most interesting interviews I've had in a while. We got invited to the Chicago Nerd Comedy Festival, and that was a ton of fun. Managed to go out there last week and see improvised Star Trek, which was incredible. It was a full improv show. Everyone knew their characters. Everybody did a fantastic job and basically created the plot on its own, and it was fascinating to watch. It was a group smaller than the regular cast of Star Trek, and some of them had to run backstage and switch into aliens because of how the story went. It was a really, really great weekend, and my thanks for the invite. And then this weekend, first of all, my band has had a couple of shows, so now I sound like this, that have gone well. And then Wizard World happened this weekend, and a friend of mine was working the booth, so he invited us to that. And Wizard World is a crazy experience. It's unlike a lot of conventions. And I completely overspent on John Romita Sr. Amazing Spider-Man's, none of which I regret. So it was another fun weekend. It was great to run into some of our friends and people that are connected to the show. And just kind of catch up with a lot of people that I hadn't seen in a while, because I know a lot of people who take interesting paths, and every time you talk to them, something really fascinating has happened. And that's what I want to get to today. No one else I know has had their own television show, but Michelle Saleo has. And I know Michelle from Brooklyn College. We went to school together, and we've been friends ever since. But an interesting thing happened a few years ago. She was a law student. She got her law degree, and all of a sudden I heard that she had her own television show on the Oprah Network. I didn't see that coming at all, because most of the people I know that got on TV were performing and writing for years and years and years to get there. So I had heard about the show, and I would talk to Michelle every now and then, and she is a listener of the show, and she contacted me to talk about one of the episodes, and I said, why is it that you haven't told this story? And she says, I've told this story to everybody. And I said, not to me and not to the people who listen to the show. So what you're going to hear now is Michelle describing how a law student gets their own TV show.
I've told it so many times that I don't think it's entertaining.
Well, I will be the judge of that, because I haven't heard it.
Okay, so you be the judge, but
I tell you what, you tell it to me six times, and yeah, I will tell you the moment it stops being entertaining.
Okay. I'll try to do my best to like liven it up again.
Well, here's where I left you. Mm-hmm. We graduated college, yeah, and you were getting your law degree.
Yeah.
And then
what happened?
I don't know. Because you were on YouTube, and then Oprah gave you a television show.
Yeah, that's really the way it
so
worked.
So there are obviously steps in between that I have no idea about.
Yeah. Okay. So before I even tell that boring story, can you promise that at the end, just so that I have like a reward to look forward to?
What?
After I tell this boring story of my life. Can we talk about Rick and Morty when we're done?
Oh my God, yes. We were, in fact, let's just talk about that now. Because
that's my reward. I can't, I have to have something.
All right. We were going to, that was going to be last week's show.
Really?
It was, and we didn't get to it, so we haven't talked about it on the show at all.
Oh my God, I'm so excited about Rick and Morty.
Okay, good. Okay. Then we'll save that till the end.
Okay, good.
Maybe we'd talk about Ant-Man, because you and I have been talking about Ant-Man. But no, let's just talk about Rick and Morty.
And Ant-Man. Okay.
Okay, you know what? We can talk about that in the middle of your story if you start to nod off.
If it starts to get boring, but at least now I'm excited to tell that story because at least now I have something.
It's the dessert of your story.
It's the dessert of my liver and onions story. Okay. All right, so I went to law school, right? And law school was really fucking hard. Like, if you grow up in Brooklyn, right, and you're a nerd your whole fucking life, you think that, like, you're going to go to law school and, like, you're going to be with finally the people who are like you.
No.
Right. Because, like, you're like, oh, my whole life I've been tortured for being a nerd, and, like, I'm going to just go to school with the nerds and they're going to accept me. Except you go to law school and then they call you Brooklyn.
Well, I had I don't know. Did you remember Robert Yee?
No.
He was in school with us. He went to law school. And he was from Flatbush, and he hated it. And now he is the project manager at Diamond Toys.
That's so cool.
Yeah. So he's still living on Bay Parkway.
Wow.
So, and he said the same thing.
Yeah.
He said that he hated everyone he met in law school.
Yeah. You get like this weird street cred just for having an accent. And I'm like, no, I'm one of you.
Where did you go to law school?
You're not one of us. I went to New York Law School. And like people...
So you didn't go to like Pennsylvania?
No.
You weren't in Ohio?
No. And like, I went to people who pronounced it New York Law School. Yeah. And I was like, that you're saying it wrong. And like, whatever. They would call me like Rocky in Brooklyn. And I was like, you know what? Why don't you just all fuck off? Like, I assholes. So then that was that, right? I made like, you know, a decent, you know, little cluster of friends, whatever.
Mm.
So I graduate law school and I go fight for truth, justice in the American way with the Administration for Children's Services, right? That was my first out of law school job. And like, I'm like, you know, prosecuting deadbeat dads who are like, you know, going to go to jail for not paying child support. And that was like a really super fun job, but the building was filthy. And like, I would get thrown up on at work.
By the deadbeat dads?
By their kids.
Oh.
Like, it was really gross. And, like, things would happen in the building that I worked in. Like, you know, there was cat poop in the elevator, and I'm not joking. And that wasn't even weird because there was a cat in the building. And so I was like, all right, whatever.
So really fighting the good fight was really just fighting against bacteria.
I was sick for 3 months because the building was so gross. So I was like, you know what? I want to have, like, an office with a secretary and a window and a plant. So then I got an office job working for medical malpractice defense. Like I defended doctors in medical malpractice claims. And that was my private office job. And like, I would call myself to hear my secretary say, Ms. Leo's office. And it was really cool. And then like after about a year and a half working there, I was like, how do you guys have babies and work here? Because everybody has kids, but nobody seems to be watching them. And they were like, oh no, you hire somebody to raise your kids. And I was like, oh, I'm Italian from Brooklyn. So I have to go
right now.
Now I can't do that. So I left. And the only thing I really remember, like at that point, I was really kind of disillusioned with the entire practice of law. And I was like, this is boring and awful. And like, the only way you can really make money is working at boring, awful firms. And if you want to have a fun job, you're going to have to be sick and get thrown up on. Like, these are my two choices. So I had this fantastic
idea. That's kind of life, isn't it? That's like income inequality right there.
Yeah.
Either you will have a terrible, boring job with lots of money, or people will throw up on you.
Yeah.
That's America now. There are only two paths. There's the vomit path and the soul-crushing money path.
Right. But the vomit path is like... fun and you feel good about yourself.
Well, it's fun to be around vomiting people.
Yes, yes, yes.
Because they're not inhibited.
No, and then but there's no place, then yeah, you're not paying your bills though. And you're like, what about my vomiting people? Like, don't they deserve money?
They have to eat or else the vomit might stop.
Yes. So I started this law school tutoring company, and it was going to be like revolutionary because I was going to be the person that I wished I had in law school. Like, I was just going to speak English about what my professors were trying to say. And like, I wrote all these lesson plans about like Brooklynizing everything in law school, because that's how I studied for the bar exam. You know, like everything I learned in the bar exam could be related to like sex or Seinfeld or a movie I'd seen.
Well, Seinfeld covers a really pretty broad range.
Exactly, right. So that's how I did it. Like everything, like property or corporations or anything I could think of, I just related to like some kind of popular culture stuff or sex. Like sex was really easy to relate stuff to, especially in contracts class when, you know, they're saying things like, preparing to perform is not the same thing as completing performance. And I'm like, I know what that reminds me of.
Yeah, it sounds dirty right there.
Right then and there.
That wasn't a lot of work for you.
Huh?
That wasn't a lot of work for you.
Not at all. I went right to the sex. I was just like, hey, I know that rule.
That's almost a single entendre.
So I was like, oh my God, contracts is just like sex. Like, what was I thinking? And then I was equating like a unilateral contracts to blowjobs, because once you start performance, you can't stop. And I'm like, yes, I know that. You'll get punched in the face.
By a contract lawyer, apparently.
Yes, right. You can't start performance and be like, you know what? I don't feel like it anymore. It doesn't work like that.
You finish your own contract.
At least not in Brooklyn. So I started tutoring kids in law school, and I made a decent amount of money doing that, because like nobody else was doing it. It was really cool. And then that business like took off, and it really did well for like 10 years. I had employees and payroll, and it was really cool. And then like Google kind of caught up with me, because that's how old I am. That like when I started the company, Google was a baby. And so you couldn't Google a law school case and find a cartoon about it. Like I was the cartoon. But like then 10 years later, like Google had cartoons of these cases, and like my sex stories about contracts weren't as fun, you know, besides nobody wanted to pay $3,000 for something they can basically get on the internet for free. So I wrote a book about it, thinking that like, well, if I wrote a book, I can go national, and then I can get, even if I got like, I don't know, 60 law school students nationally, it would still make me good. Like I'd be all right, but it didn't work. And then we found out that, I started doing YouTube videos about the law school courses, thinking that I'd get some traction that way and support the books. And I'm so sorry, I like lost my track. I was going to like these women in business like meetings.
Okay.
And that was a lot of like, you can do it, yeah, we're women and we're gonna, you know, take over the world. And I was just like, whatever, I need to make money. So one of the ladies there was just like, you've got such a big personality, you need to be on TV. And I was like, that sounds like fun. How do I do that? And she was like, well, I don't know. You're the lawyer. You figure that out. Like, I'm just a business guru.
Like, now you're a talent agent because you're a lawyer.
Yeah. Yeah. You can do anything. Like, that's what people think. Like, just because you're a lawyer, like, I could do surgery, you know? And I'm like, thank you for that fantastic advice. Great. So then like I literally went home and I Googled. It turns out the lady was right, because I Googled how do you get on television. And it said find a production company. That's what Google said. So I then Googled local New York City production companies, and I started calling them from the top list down. Mm-hmm. And what I did was I called, and I don't even know this well. I looked on the website, right? And whoever the contact person was, I certainly did not call that person, because you were sure to get that person's voicemail. So instead, I called the director of the company. Like, they would always have like the president of the company, who's like the face of the company, and he used to work for MGM or Sony or whatever, right? Now he's the head of like, I don't know, Fish Pants Production Company. They all have these weird names.
Yeah, they all start their own quirky little shops because they're tired of being corporate.
Right, and they realize that you make a lot of money when you're the production people. So I would call the production companies and try to get the director, or like definitely not call the contact person. So the first production company guy spoke to me, right? And he was just like, here's what you need to do, and you need to do a video, and you need to da, da, da. So I was like, thank you. And he's like, but we're not interested in lawyers with big mouths. So I was like, okay, thank you very much.
Now, had you ever thought about it? Because you weren't really a performer.
No,
before.
I never thought about it. That lady said.
And were you a trial lawyer? Like, was public speaking a part of your job as a lawyer?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you already had the skills to get up in front of people and convince them to your point of view.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was never a problem for me. I'm not, you know, don't act like you don't know me, Joe.
But you know what? People listening to this show don't know you.
Oh, right. So, yeah.
I'm recording all this.
So getting up in front of people is zero problem at all.
Right.
But
what I was saying is you didn't have a drama background, or like you weren't an actress that went on auditions. You were kind of a lawyer that was more of the public face of a firm, and then you thought, well, television would be a good avenue for that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like I could be on TV and the TV could be my commercial. But it's not I didn't think I could be on TV because I had any training entertainment-wise at all. No comedic experience, no drama classes. Like, I took public speaking classes in high school because they were required, but that was really the end of it, you know? So, where the hell was I? Rick and Morty.
We're not at Rick and Morty yet.
Yeah.
You were doing the thing, which I never did, which is why I was never as successful as I thought I should, which is calling everyone in the industry and not worrying about how they would feel about it.
I know, right.
That's where you were. I always got to the point where I sent Marvel a pitch, and they would send a nice letter, and I go, well, that's the end of that exchange.
Yeah.
I wasn't calling every single person.
I was calling, right. I just found all of the New York ones because I was like, I'm not going outside of New York because I'm lazy and I'm not really.
I'm not taking a bridge to stardom.
No, I'm not going to, like, I'm not going anywhere else but New York. And besides which, like, I wasn't entirely convinced that this was a good idea anyway. And I didn't really have anything to lose. Like, this wasn't my dream, you know? Mm-hmm. So I called up this one, like, I called up the first guy and he spoke to me, but he was like, I'm not interested. I called up the second guy and they weren't home. And I called up the third guy and I was like, look, my name's Michelle Saleo and I have been told that I got a big personality and I should be on TV. And, I don't want to sound like a douchebag, but like, I don't know if I'm supposed to hire you or you're supposed to hire me. Like, I don't know how this whole thing works. That's literally what I said.
This story is half Little Rascals and half Sergeant Bilko. That's where it is. It's just like, hi, I want to be on TV, but I don't care what you do.
Right, with a little bit of Mr. Magoo in there, because like I'm just walking and seeing like the next plank fall into place.
Yeah,
you know. So the guy gets like real nervous and he's like, "Hold on." So then the next guy picks up the phone and he goes, "Hello." So I go, "Hello," and he goes, "Yes." So I go, "Oh." I go, well, before I repeat myself, how much of the spiel I just gave the other guy did you hear before I start over again? So,
this is the worst pitch meeting ever. Like, who are you? Do I have to again with this? This is, I think, how Larry David got hired. And no one else.
And then he quit before he even got the job.
Yeah.
So then he goes, I don't know. All I have in front of me is a sticky note that says, Michelle, lawyer, big personality. So I go, oh, yeah. Okay, this is me. I'm Michelle. I'm a lawyer. I'm a big personality. And I was told I need a television show. And that's why I'm calling. And I'm not sure if I'm supposed to hire you or you're supposed to hire me. So he goes, do you have any videos on YouTube that I can see before we even take this conversation any further? We're always looking for big personalities, but like, let's, you know, whatever, see what you're like. So I go, yeah. And I show him, I send him YouTube and he goes, all right, I'm going to look at this. And like, you know, I'll give you a call back. So I'm like, okay, I hang up and I'm starting to call the next guy on the list, you know? And then the phone rings and it's that guy again. So I go, hello. And he goes, I just saw your YouTube video. You're hilarious. And can you come in on Monday for a meeting with the executive guy here? And that was that.
Wow.
Oh, and then how did Oprah happen? Okay. So the executive guy, we go meet him, and I basically tell him the same story I did about contracts and blowjobs. And
he said, I think Oprah wants to hear this story.
No, he goes, well, do you have
nothing Oprah likes more than blowjob stories.
I know, right? She does love those blowjob stories. So I was like, well, you know, we do have this little component of our business that's like a mediation business, and that might be a good backdrop for a reality television show. And he's like, that's it. We'll come out, we'll film you do that. And then there's a thing called, oh God, there's like a convention, John, you know the name of this thing, that happens, I think, in DC where production companies go and they pitch their shows. What is that called?
I don't know. I know the upfronts are when the networks announce the shows.
It wasn't the upfronts. It was like this other thing where like reality shows get pitched. Dang it. I used to know it. Anyway, he's like, that's coming up very soon in February. So let's get your sizzle reel, which I didn't know what that was, filmed as soon as possible. I made that phone call to the production company in November. They filmed the sizzle reel in December. The whatever convention thing was in January, and Oprah saw it in January and offered us a 6-episode series in February.
So 4 months.
Yeah. From the phone call.
From you calling people and saying, who are you and why aren't you working for me?
Yeah.
To a 6-episode series on Oprah's network.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I still don't know how that happens.
Me either.
You just explained it.
Yeah.
And I have not a clue.
And then everybody that came to work on the show, like, keep on, like, understand, the whole thing was just like very Mr. Magooey. Like, I don't know. Okay. Yeah. You know, and people kept being like, wow, this is amazing. And I'd be like, it is? Like, what's amazing? I don't understand. Like, what's the big deal? The showrunner came and she was like absolutely wonderful. And she was just like, what happened? How did you get hired? That never happens. This takes years and years. And we were like, oh, that's interesting. Like, having no idea, you know? So like the amazing part of it just kind of washed over us, 'cause I just didn't have any real sense of that, you know?
Mm.
I was like George Lucas, because I missed the Luke, I am your father amazing part, because I knew it the whole time.
So, okay, that's why you're on the show, is because you're George Lucas.
Because I'm George Lucas, and I didn't know it at the time. And so the big reveal got lost on me.
I don't know if George Lucas knew it for a while.
I know. But he does lament that. He's like, it's really sad that I don't get to have that same reaction as everybody else. I know. And then
also doesn't have the same reaction everyone has to the prequel, so I think eventually it balanced out.
I just hate that no one else gets to have it. Like, I'm glad that we all got to have it in our generation, but like the kids that came after us all knew that he was Luke's father, and then that was it. Like, it never.
Yeah.
Nobody kept that secret. Everybody kept the Bruce Willis secret in frickin' Sixth Sense. Nobody could keep the secret, goddammit.
Well, the problem with Star Wars and. As I've talked about this on the show before, my oldest son, Ben, who's 8 now, he's a perfect Star Wars age, but it's been so ubiquitous.
Ugh, I know.
That he's just like, oh, yeah, he's like, here's Star Wars, and here's these characters. He has never seen the end of a Star Wars movie. Because every time we watch one, by the last half hour, he's just in another room.
I know.
It's just like, and he loves like the Marvel movies and the Batman movies. Like, he loves superheroes, loves comedy. Like, I can't pull him off Teen Titans Go. Watched all of Lord of the Rings with me when he was way too young to watch it.
Right.
And just Star Wars, he's like, I think that might be what it is that the generation of our kids take it so much for granted.
Yes, they do.
It's just like, it's just in the ether, so who cares?
It's a waste, if you ask me.
I know. And I asked him, I was like, do you want to see this new movie? And he's like, yeah, maybe.
Maybe. I know.
You know, Ant-Man, he was asking me about for a month. But this, I was like, he's like, I don't know. Like, we saw the trailer for Star Wars in Ant-Man.
Yeah.
And he was like, maybe.
Oh, is that terrible?
It's weird is what it is. But the conclusion I came to is, why am I going to fight for 6 movies?
That's true.
There's two good ones right now. And maybe the seventh one is good, but there's 2 out of 6. It's not a great batting average.
But see, this is where the chicken me comes out, because I liked Return of the Jedi because he got to kiss Leia.
Han Solo?
Of course, Han Solo.
Okay. I thought you were still holding out hope for Luke.
Luke? Luke's a child. Han Solo's a man. And Leia's not.
You're why I miss New York. Just that alone. Luke's a child. Han Solo's a man. You know what? That Ben and I have been watching Seinfeld now. He's starting to get old enough. Yeah. And that was exactly like the episode where Elaine had shiksa appeal. And the kid on his bar mitzvah made out with her.
I'm a man!
I'm a man! We've been saying that to each other for like 2 weeks.
I know. My son's all into it. It's terrible.
How old is he?
He's 11. And I'm like... I can't wait for him to catch up so that, you know, we could start watching real comedy together. And by can't wait, I mean, I literally cannot wait. So I jumped the gun.
Yeah, I do the same thing.
So like, he saw the Blues Brothers when he was 8, and like every other word in that movie is fuck. And I'm like, just don't pay attention to it because it's funny.
Yeah, I know. I say that to him too whenever there's bad words. I'm like, you know, you're not allowed to say that, right? People get mad at you if you say that. That's part of the joke.
They especially get daddy.
My big problem is when we're watching something that's very PG-13 and like sex jokes happen.
Yeah.
Or like somebody gets like crazy aroused.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, what's going on? I'm like, he's crazy. That's just my excuse for everybody. Like, what's the anchor man doing right now? Oh, Ron Burgundy's crazy.
He's just a nutball.
That's why he's so funny.
Oh, hey, look, Daddy, I'm going crazy.
In my pants.
Wait. couple of years.
I don't want to. Well, we also had it. We have an 8-year-old and a 2-year-old. So, yeah. Like, right when things got easy, we made sure to push the reset button and do everything over again.
Yeah. I know that feeling, man. It's rough stuff.
I know. So when all this happens.
Yeah.
So you have a production company working with you, and then all of a sudden they're interested in the show. Mm-hmm. You don't know what's going on. How involved are you in what the concept of that show would ultimately be, or are you kind of along for the ride, like whatever you guys want to do?
I was very involved and not involved enough in a lot of ways. Like it was essentially my idea, right? But the production company refused to allow me to have producer credit, which was a mistake. So I, you know, in the interest of keeping everything friendly, I relinquished that that question or that issue. And I was like, okay, fine. If I'm just talent, then I'm just talent. But then at the same time, like, they were up my ass all the time about casting, which I knew casting was going to be a problem because people don't necessarily want to air their grievances, you know, on TV, especially like a mediation issue.
Right. And now to be clear, the show was you mediating legal issues.
Yes. Like legal disputes that were like about to go to trial or about to go to like lawyers in court. Right. And so like, these are really personal issues. And the other, like, and so that was a problem. Like people didn't necessarily want to air their grievances. A. B is that once people did, you had to make sure that they were the right kind of grievances. Like it couldn't be a divorce that was already settled and now they want to like enforce the divorce order, because that's not something that's sort of mediatable on TV.
Right, and there's no dramatic stakes to it.
Yeah, right. There's no dramatic
stakes. Like, will he get the house?
Right. So yeah. there was a lot of problems with casting and a lot of money wasted filming potential people where they didn't even consult me first. Like, they should have just been like, do you think that this is a possible issue before you start wasting budget money filming these people, you know? And then it was things like, what about like locations? Like they would book locations on one side of Staten Island and then book another thing 20 minutes later on the other side of Staten Island. And while Staten Island is very small, it's quite dense and you cannot make it across the island in under 20 minutes, no matter what Google tells you.
Yeah. Now when last time I came to New York, I recalled firsthand that you cannot make it from the Verrazano Bridge to Jersey in 20 minutes.
No. And maybe it's 12 miles and it's not going to happen. Like, forget that, you know, but like they wouldn't consult me on stuff like that. So, you know, we wound up always running over schedule and it was like a disaster. Like in hindsight, it was very, very stressful. When I was going through it, I didn't feel stressed, but like all kinds of other things were happening to me physically. Like I had tremendous heart palpitations. I was on beta blockers. I couldn't eat. Like without throwing up, like, and I was just like, I wonder why I'm so, I can't even, bleh. And then, you know, but I didn't feel stressed out, but like all these physical things were happening. And now in hindsight, I realized like it was incredibly stressful.
Well, and, it's amazing when you get older. I was just talking this over with my dad about how you can bury stress so down deep that you don't know why you're having these physical problems.
Mm-hmm.
You're just like, you know what? I'm handling this stress so well, and I will be right back after I go to the bathroom.
Yes.
Because these are two completely separate issues that just happen to be happening right now.
Yes. Like, I wasn't having, because I just decided that, like, stress equals headaches and chest pains and stomach aches. And since I wasn't having any one of those three things, I'm like, I must not be under stress. And now, like, when I think about it, I'm like, oh God, like it was really awful. Like then things would happen with like the cast, like the people that they cast, like they would just hold us for ransom. Like they would just be like, we're not going to film the second half unless you pay us cash right now. So many times I was like stuck outside somebody's house waiting for the production team to negotiate some kind of a deal so that we can continue to film. Like it was just very stressful, you know, not necessarily anybody's fault necessarily, but just stressful. And then like, I feel like if I was part of the production team, I could have done something to avoid this.
Right. There were a lot of pitfalls.
Yeah. And I felt like out of control, you know, and then like a victim, not a victim of anybody, a victim of circumstance. Like this is just out of control.
And how long was filming?
It was supposed to be 2 months, but it wound up being 6 months.
Really?
Yeah.
So it was triple the amount of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, I can count.
You can.
We met in college and I can count.
Then what happened was, so then after we were like, don't worry, it'll be worth it. Because like if Oprah should say the name of your product on her show, that thing will like, you know, quintuple in sales. So here we are. She's not saying our thing. She's giving us like 3 hours of talking about our thing. And like, this is going to be phenomenal. Like, this is going to be great for the tutoring company and great for the books. And like, this is going to be fantastic. And then it big fat wasn't, because the pilot got scheduled to air with 3 weeks notice. So they press released it 3 weeks before the pilot aired. So it really left no time to promote it. The pilot aired on the, I think it was like playoff Saturday of the football season. And I'm a geek, so I don't know why this was an important game, but apparently it was a very important football playoff game. So anyone in the Northeast that was watching TV was watching football. And anyone in the South was not watching me.
With your big personality.
With my big personality and my New York accent, you know, on the Oprah Winfrey Channel. So when that week's ratings tanked, which of course they were, there was a phone call on Monday that said, thank you, it's not you, it's us, and that'll be that.
So that was it after the airing of the first episode?
Yeah, that was that.
And they aired all six?
Eventually.
Oh, it was kind of like just run randomly kind of thing?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so the story is kind of like a success and a failure all at the same time.
Yeah, but that, well, it left as soon as it came in, it sounded like.
Yeah.
You didn't know why it happened, and you didn't, well, you kind of knew why it left, but I
just felt like, you know, Oprah was behind it at first, and then there was all these, like, murmurs about, like, oh, you're going to get a phone call from her, she watched the video this weekend, like, sometime this weekend she's watching you, and, like, you're going to get a phone call from her, like, we're probably going to meet her, and, like, this is going to be great, and da-da-da-da-da. And then the more I worked on the show, the more ridiculous that idea seemed. And then, oh, when Hurricane Sandy happened, I was like, oh, she was in New York, like, subsequent to the hurricane. And I was like, wow, she should definitely make an appearance on Staten Island, especially since she has a show called Staten Island Law, like, that she should be promoting. And she big fat didn't call me or anybody else in the cast or in the crew, no one, to see how we were doing. And I felt kind of let down by that. And then I was like, well, really, what do I expect from Oprah Winfrey? I mean, like, she's the, you know, a billionaire, successful woman. And then on second thought, I was like, but you know what? She didn't even tweet about the show. You know, she didn't tweet me. She didn't tweet the show. She didn't do anything to promote it at all. And she just kind of just lost interest, I think, or just had an interest in making sure it didn't succeed for whatever reason. And along about that time, she made a deal with Tyler Perry. The August before the show aired, she made a deal with Tyler Perry to give him a certain percentage of her interest in the network. So I think she decided to take the network in a different direction, but she was already in contract with us. This is where the story gets really boring.
Not boring
by the time
yet.
The show aired, you know, it was just the show that she didn't necessarily want anymore.
So it was kind of orphaned.
Yeah.
Because of, and you know, and you hear about this kind of thing. I think it's an interesting story because it reminds me, I was just watching this documentary on Big Star on Netflix over the weekend. Mm. Have you ever heard of the band Big Star?
Vaguely.
They were like early 70s. They were kind of everything Walker likes. Okay. But, you know, very
glam rock?
Yeah, very kind of singer-songwriter-y with like high vocals and you know, but clean electric guitar, that kind of sound.
Okay.
And this story was kind of about how, like, all the critics loved their albums and they got a lot of buzz, and then the sales weren't there and they collapsed and broke up, and then they got back together and did another album and the critics loved it and the sales weren't there and they collapsed and broke up. And it was making me think, like, how more often that story happens and how relatable that is to something like, I was reading Pete Townsend's autobiography, where it all kind of sounds predestined, you know, where he's like, and then I wrote My Generation and then it was a hit and then we toured the world. And it's like, oh yeah, that's how it happens. And why didn't it happen for me? And then you realize, why didn't it happen for thousands of guys? including these guys. And I feel like your story is kind of that reality show story. You're like, people look at something like the Kardashians and go, yeah, of course, you'd put out a reality show and that's, and you know, a media circus erupts around it.
Right.
But you don't know why that happens. You don't know when that's happened.
Yeah.
And for the most part, you don't know what to do when that doesn't happen.
Yeah. And it was very kind of disorienting, and I didn't know what to do about it. But I did learn a lot, right? So also during the filming, like, I'm quite a pessimist, you know, from New York, and I'm Italian and whatever. And during the filming, I kept looking at all of these reality television shows that I'd never heard of on my guide, on my TV guide. You know? Mm-hmm. And I was like, what the hell show is this? I never heard of this. And I never heard of this show. And I never heard of this show. And oh my God, you know, like, there's hundreds of reality shows that have come and gone and I have never heard of them. And my show could be just like that. And then beyond that, there's hundreds of television talk shows I've never heard of where the person is hosting a show and I don't even know who this person is. So why do I even think that this is even going to work? And then, so when it didn't, I was disappointed because I had reasonable expectations. I had at least what I thought were reasonable expectations. You know, it was Oprah Winfrey. It was a show about friendship. It wasn't trashy. You know, it was what everybody seemed to say that they wanted. You know, it wasn't Mob Wives. So it had what I thought was a recipe for success. And I had reasonably, I didn't decide that the show was going to be successful and that's what was going to make me money. I knew that there was no money in the show. I thought that the business behind the show was going to be the thing that picked up because it essentially was a commercial, and that didn't happen either. So then I was like, you know, I think Pete Townsend is 100% the exception and not the rule, and not necessarily because his talent, you know.
Well, his reality show is fantastic.
Yeah, right.
It's a lot of people telling him things and he can't hear them.
Right.
It's called What?
I think that,
why
like,
are people talking to me? I don't want people to bloody talking to me.
I do love Pete Townsend, and I think he's great. But I just think that he's just another, like, there is no, if, no, I'm going to be an artist of any kind is a recipe for disaster. And it's something that I 100% do not encourage my children to do. And even though, like, you know, my dad was a commercial artist, right, for King Features. Did you know that?
Right, yeah.
Okay, so it brought him absolutely no joy. He did Richie Rich and Casper the Friendly Ghost for Harvey Comics. And it brought him absolutely no joy. My dad was the happiest guy you ever want to see in your life, but his art, which he's fantastically talented, brought him no joy. So I was raised with this idea that, like, if you were artistically inclined, which I was, it was something that was a nice hobby, but it should definitely be squashed as far as any professional dreams were concerned. So if you want to perform, you should perform in front of a judge. That was basically what I was told.
Now, was that for the job security or just kind of protect your ego or just the odds against it?
Just for to be fulfilled in your life.
Okay. So so basically it sounds like it's a somewhat valuable lesson of don't pin all your personality into your career.
Yeah, because what reality television show like has taught me is that it's really when they say it's about what you know and not who you know, it is the other way around. It is like, you know, it's you knowing a guy who knows a guy. That's all it is, you know. And you just have to get in and know the right people and know the right guys and mix in with the right people. If you're 20 years old, like I was listening to. Oh God, his name went right out of my head. That cute redheaded boy that has all these hits right now.
Conan O'Brien.
No, that's a man. That's a man. Who's the 20-year-old redhead? Ed Sheeran. He was on.
Oh yeah.
Howard Stern, and Howard Stern was like, "What advice do you give anybody that's coming up now?" And he's like, "Whatever you're doing, if you're in high school, stop and just do your music, right?" So I guess I take my mom's lesson, which is drop it. And I say, look, you know, if you want to use your talent to be the way that you're going to make a living, then you're going to have to make your talent your job. And a lot of artists don't necessarily want to embrace that idea. Like, you have to make your talent your job every day, 9 to 5. You're doing your talent as your job. You're going to school to learn it, or you're going to studios to learn it, or you're getting out there and meeting people and networking and getting to know the people that you need to know so that you can be in the business of your art, because like it or not, that's the business you're in.
Right. Well, the alternative is having a day job that's not connected to your talent.
Exactly.
And that's a much more depressing prospect of, you know, waiting tables or doing data entry or IT.
Yeah.
And you don't care, so you can go home and play your music or write or audition for things.
But then that's what's going to, right. But then that's what your job is going to be. Like, you know, then your talent is going to just always be that. It's going to be that thing that you do in the basement.
Right. And, yeah. You know, there's things to be said for it. I think that there's a certain amount of protection to it, you know, to never having to put yourself out there, you know, because you can always think you're brilliant.
Yeah, right.
If there is no evidence to prove that you're not great,
right,
you can stay great.
Yeah. I feel like I hear like Walker's voice being like, that's not true because I was out there and I was doing it and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. But, you know, everybody has a moment, but I think what your story is showing is that sometimes it's fleeting.
Yeah.
And if you based all of yourself on that moment, then you're just the person who was. You know, and I had a hard time when I moved out to Chicago 5 years ago because I was just coming off of doing stand-up for 4 years where I wasn't great, but I was good enough to be in the scene. Mm-hmm. And I got to know a lot of people that are very successful now. Yeah. And then my last advertising job, I was winning awards and I was doing huge campaigns. And when I moved here, not only did I leave all my friends that I grew up with, but I kind of stopped that path to start something up again. And it took me a long time to figure out how to do that. And this podcast is one of the things that I figured out.
Yeah.
Of like, well, I'm not going to do stand-up anymore. I have kids and a mortgage, so I'm not going to be running around the city anymore. So what am I going to do? And it's like, well, honestly, I could record something every week and send it out.
Right.
You know, but what are you doing now? Now, once the dust all settled from that, did you go back to your law career?
Once all the dust settled, I was like, I have no income and no prospects for the first time since before law school. Like, I graduated law school with a job. So, like, this was really disorienting. And so there was a time there where I was doing a lot of Fox News commentary, which is not a job by any stretch because a job means that you're getting paid. But I thought that that would somehow lead to a job, but it didn't, you know, it was nice. It was really nice. And I really got to be myself, even though Fox News is conservative, but I still got to be my normal liberal self and they enjoyed it and it was nice, blah, blah, blah. But it got to the point where I was just like, but I'm not making any money doing this. So I don't want to do this anymore. So, I, you know, got myself together and I hung out a shingle and now I'm doing family law again, you know, and I'm also a professor at, State University in New York.
So, did you start your own firm, or are you at a firm again?
No. I started my own. When you are, I'm somebody's mom now, so that's my full time job. I hate to sound like that, like I'm a mom first, but
you don't sound like that if you do it in a silly voice. so I think you're safe.
But like when I had the kids, like I had them with the focus of that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to have the kids. Right. So like, that's why I left the firm. And like, that was going to be my focus. Like I knew the kind of mother that I wanted to be and I needed to be like in control of everything and whatever. But, you can't be the kind of mother that I want to be and be at a firm because they need you to be a lawyer there. And I'm not saying that I'm not a lawyer here. It's just that I can do it on my own terms, you know?
Right.
When you go into a field that's male dominated for many, many years, you know, you can't expect a female lifestyle to fit into that. You know what I mean? Like female dominated businesses or roles accommodate a female's lifestyle. That's why it works, right? Nurses and teachers traditionally are for women so that women could be there with their kids. And it's no judgment, and it's no, you know, that's just the way it works. Doctors and lawyers are not necessarily lifestyles for women because we like to be home with our kids. Unless, of course, you can hang out a shingle and have that career on your own terms, which is what I've tried to do. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if I'm successful at it yet. I've really only been doing it for a year so far. But it's working. But now, that's what I'm doing. And family law really does provide for its own entertainment. So there's that.
Because families is crazy.
They be crazy.
That was the beginning of every bad stand-up set in the 90s.
Really?
Well, anything be crazy in the 90s.
That's true. All
you were halfway to a premise. We were just talking about that movie Osmosis Jones.
Yes!
Remember that movie? It was this huge bomb where, like, it was Chris Rock as like a white blood cell, and the whole movie boils down to germs be crazy.
Ugh, you know, and like Chris Rock, like he's such a genius. Why can't he pick a movie?
He can't. I just saw Top 5 and it was interesting, but it certainly wasn't anything that millions of people were going to go to.
Ugh,
like, I don't. When it's good, it's like this little indie film
that
nobody wants to see. Well, and you know, he has these kind of indie sensibilities, which is what Louis had until, like, he focused on his stand-up, and then his FX show was like Louis was bombing in everything because he was kind of doing what Chris Rock is doing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
When in doubt, agree loudly.
So Rick and Morty.
Yes. Now we can talk about Rick and Morty.
Yay.
It's been a long time since season one and season two of Rick and Morty.
Has it? Okay, yeah. I just got turned on to Rick and Morty within the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, well, Rick and Morty started in 2013. And season one was in 2013, and it was the show that Dan Harmon was doing when he got fired from Community. And then he got rehired for Community, and it took a long time for him to find time to work on this second season.
Mm-hmm.
But now Community's done, and his co-showrunner, Justin Roiland, who's the animation guy, has been really focused on it. So I saw season one when it first aired, and I thought it was really weird, and I was watching it just for Dan Harmon. But now that season two has just started, I've been rewatching season one.
Right.
And
Is it that much of a serial that you need to watch one and two?
No, not at all. You don't even have to watch the season in order.
Okay, good.
But it's like, it had been so long since I'd seen it that when it would pop up on Cartoon Network, I was like, oh, let me DVR it and watch it again. And I caught so much stuff that I didn't catch the first time.
Ugh. What is happening with cartoons now that they're amazing. And it's not just, like, obviously it's not necessarily the animation, because I feel like that's just the vehicle. But, like, I feel like comedy-wise, I'm getting the shit beat out of me. You know, like,
yeah.
I watch Bob's Burgers, and, like, it's one after the next. You can't even digest one hilarious line before the next one punches you in the face.
Yeah, I love Bob's Burgers. Burgers is, like, now that Futurama's done, is the closest thing to classic Simpsons.
Yes. Yes. It's just amazing. Like, and every episode, I just can't. And at least my son and I can watch this, and I don't necessarily feel terrible, even though many times I'm like...
Yeah, see, I watched one or two with my son, and then we watched this one. I think it was from season one. He wasn't in the room, and I was watching it with my wife, but the one where a jelly bean tries to rape Morty.
Yeah.
And then I was like, Ben can't watch any of this.
No.
I was like, because... They'll go to this place, and I'm not taking that risk.
Great.
He loves violence. He's like, yay, blood. Like, I let him watch Key and Peele.
It's so funny.
I know, and it's ending. It's so sad.
But, like, with Bob's... But there are many episodes he could see. Like, he could see the running of the turkeys.
Yeah, and Bob's Burgers, yeah.
Which is so good. And all the Thanksgiving episodes, Turkey in the Can... And that's really perfect because it's got all kinds of toilet humor in it.
Right.
So, you know, the one about Linda accidentally going to the adult toy party is not necessarily one that the kids can see. But, like, you know, you have to pre-screen them because there are those that are worth the family viewing.
Or you just do what I do and go, Linda's crazy. What is that outfit? That's wacky.
My 7-year-old's like, why? What is that? Why can't we watch the one with the toys? What did she have? What is it? And I'm like, nothing. It's nothing. It was a ear cleaner.
See, but that's gonna make him more interested.
Yeah, no.
That's why I just go, I don't know. Sometimes I just pretend I don't get it, and I get it. I'm like, I don't know what that meant.
No.
What's this next joke coming?
Isn't that terrible? I'm watching Rick and Morty too, and like I'm like, wait a minute, you can't. And I'm finally like, it was. What turned me on was, oh, they did Rick and Morty did an opening of The Simpsons.
Yes, which was great.
So good. So good. Like, oh.
But I love when my favorite moment was when Rick tells Morty to go to the dimension to clone the Simpsons. And he's like, what are you going to do? He's like, I got to stay here. There's like a billion characters in the Simpsons. George Bush used to live here.
That was so great. So then of course, like my son and I start like YouTubing everything because it's on Adult Swim. And I'm like, maybe YouTube will censor some stuff for us, you know?
Yeah, I don't know about that.
No. Then finally, like, after many clips, I said, I think this is not a show you could watch.
Yeah, I let him see one that he could watch. He watched the season premiere with me, which was amazing, where they, like, broke into 64 different realities. And that one wasn't that bad. There was a lot of deer blood, but, which doesn't seem to connect. But, you know, they put in a subplot where there's a lot of deer blood. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that one's okay. And then when I saw, like, I was watching the Mr. Meeseeks, and I really wanted to show him the Mr. Meeseeks. And that was the one where the jelly bean tried to rape Morty. And I'm like, yeah, I just can't.
Dang it. You're like, dang it.
I know. And I was like, that's a subplot. I just wanted him to see the Meeseeks.
But, like, I just, how can I say this? My favorite thing is that Rick burps, like, spontaneously.
Yes. And there's always something coming out of his mouth.
At the same, right. So, it's very Foster Brooks.
Yeah.
And that's, like, really old school.
That's the beginning of film.
The beginning of film, Foster Brooks. But like that, but my dad is like my dad is, you know, born in the 40s and he did like Casper the Friendly Ghost and like raised me on comedy. And like, that's who I grew up watching, you know, like Don Rickles and Dean Martin and Foster Brooks.
And see, he shouldn't have shown you that. So I feel vindicated. Like, I'm glad Ben knows who Will Ferrell is.
Yes. Yeah, see, you never know. So like I of course, like, I'm watching Rick and Morty, and I'm like, James, you have to watch Foster Brooks. So I drag my poor 11-year-old, like, this poor kid. You know
how Rick and Morty originally started?
No.
There was Dan Harmon was part of a website, like pre-YouTube, called Channel 101, where everybody would make short films. And Justin Roiland, who's the animator, created a film, and it was a parody of Back to the Future.
Uh-huh. I knew it!
They're Marty and Doc Brown.
Right.
And obviously, as this show goes on, they get farther and farther away from that.
Right, right. Well, because, yeah, Morty's Morty.
Yeah, yeah, Morty's not Michael J. Fox.
He's just...
There's a little.
A little, right. Yay, Rick and Morty.
So that's your greatest thing in the world this week, Rick and Morty.
I was so excited about finding it. I was like, this is going to be great. It's going to be my new thing to get obsessed with, because how much Linda Belcher can I really talk about?
Yeah, Bosberg is good, but you need other shows. Have you seen, I've mentioned this on the show before, but have you seen Review?
No.
It's on tonight. Premieres tonight. It's Andy Daly, who's like an improv guy that's been in everything in little bit parts.
Mm-hmm.
It's based on an old British show, but the idea is that he has a reality show. Mm-hmm. Where he takes suggestions from Twitter of people asking him to review life experiences. And then he just does them. And people ask him to go into outer space or to have a best friend or to get addicted to cocaine. And he will do it.
No.
Yes. It's scripted. It's not a reality show. It's okay. It's definitely a scripted sitcom that's made to look like a reality show.
Which is better.
Yeah, it's... It's so good. Like, now that everybody knows what Key and Peele is, that's the show I've been really trying to get people to watch. So it's it might be on while we're no, you know what? Oh, no, 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 no. As soon as we get off, it's going to come on.
All right, sweet.
Comedy Central.
I'm on it.
Okay.
I'm taking notes.
Now, how do we get in touch with you online?
I just started Cyberdust. Do you know what this is?
No, you told me about it, and I didn't know what it was.
It's like a... Oh, I don't want to be judgmental. I was going to say it's like a grown-up version of Facebook, but that sounds judgmental. It's wanting to be LinkedIn and Facebook together. So it's supposed to be for, you know, business people making connections, mm-hmm. but people are really just having a good time.
Oh, so basically it's if people actually posted stuff on LinkedIn.
Yes. Okay. And in a way more fun platform. And here's the fun thing about Cyberdust. When you blast something, it disappears. So it's kind of like Snapchat too.
Oh, okay.
The idea being conversations don't last forever, and so neither should your texts.
Hmm, that's interesting.
I know. And as an attorney, I do love that.
Oh, I know. We've had issues with attorneys coming on the show because a lot of them do not like being recorded.
Oh, yeah, right? Well, I have no problems with that.
I know. Well, you had a TV show.
It's true. I'm all out there.
But I know you're on Twitter, and I know you're on...
I know, but I hardly ever tweet that thing. And I'm Fat Mishy on Cyberdust, too.
Okay.
But on Cyberdust, it's spelled right. It's spelled Fatmishy.
Okay. And you're on Facebook. Do you want people to follow you on Facebook, or do you want...
No.
Yeah, because a lot of people want to just be personal on Facebook.
Yeah, and like, the show gave me PTSD, and I don't want anybody looking at me anymore.
Okay. Well, this is an audio podcast, so you're totally safe.
I totally do appreciate that, too. I do look spectacular right now.
You know what? Your avatar looks great. And I'm saying, and I don't know how old that is, but I'm going to assume it was from today because it looks warm out.
Yeah. Yeah. It was. Yeah. That's from today.
There you go.
And you could Google all of those images with the professional makeup and the lighting, and that's exactly what I look like at this very moment.
That's your avatar for the next 20 years. So you're two Michelle Saleos on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I think I'm only connected to one of them.
Maybe the wrong one. The Twitter that I pay attention to is the one with the blue check.
Which is, again?
Michelle Saleo 1.
Okay.
That's that one.
It really sounds like your password. You're like, I got to change my password and I don't want to. So I'm putting a 1 after it.
Yeah, right. I'm that creative.
You can follow me at Not In My Book on Twitter. That is the Caffeinated Comics Twitter feed. Like us on Facebook. A lot of things going on Facebook. And Steven's shop is 19 South LaGrange Road in LaGrange, Illinois. We will talk to you next week.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.